This is Danny and Gallant on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Streaming nationwide on the 710 Sports app and 710sports.com.
Now here are your hosts, Danny O'Neill and Paul Gallant.
Play the play on the show.
I would like to pause on the eve of this Super Bowl to thank the powers that be for the fact that there's no New England Patriots involved. I can't tell you how absolutely happy and excited I am about this, and it's not personal. I was just tired of them. I was tired of the storylines, tired of the fact that four of the past five Super Bowls have featured them. We got a new and exciting matchup. It's the NFL's new world order. You know that this is the first time in 8 years that neither a Manning nor a Brady is involved in the Super Bowl?
There's a little twinkle in your eye, Danny. This does feel a little personal. Come on.
It's not personal. It's not personal at all, except that I was sick of those storylines. I don't want to hear anything more about the Mannings. I don't want to hear anything more about them. In fact, there's a little bit of me that at some point I'm going to start hearing updates about the children of the Mannings, right? The third generation. Like, that's going to happen at some point. I don't want it. I'm tired of that storyline. I'm sick of the explanations of why the Patriots are great. And this isn't even, they're not that good. Or I'm just tired of it. I've heard enough of it. I'm excited to see two first-time starters in the Super Bowl. We haven't had that since Joe Flacco versus Colin Kaepernick, which is kind of weird to say. Joe Flacco and Colin Kaepernick were starting against each other in a Super Bowl not all that long ago. Like, it's not that far in the distant past. I'm pumped for a new matchup.
I'm intrigued by it. It's been a different week in Miami. We haven't been there, but everyone seems to be a lot more laid back, a lot more relaxed. Maybe that's also a byproduct of the Patriots not being there. I remember there was always these urban legends about how if you ever said anything even slightly derogatory about the New England Patriots, they'd come and get you. They'd write it on a bulletin board, and then they would use it as motivational fuel, and they'd end up beating you because of it. But this week, it's just been laxed. It's been an interesting dynamic.
Don't you think it's because it's two teams that haven't been there before?
So there's
a little bit of we're both happy to be here. I mean, how many players on either team have been involved in a Super Bowl game before? I mean, Andy Reid's been to the Super Bowl, and Richard Sherman's gone a couple times with the Seattle Seahawks. But by and large, these are two teams that are fairly young, and they're in this spotlight, and it's a really exciting opportunity for them. And there's a sense of like, hey, and neither one feels that like, oh, this is our last gasp. Like Peyton Manning's last couple Super Bowl appearances, there was a, this might be the last time we see Peyton Manning sort of sense to it. I mean, and by the end, like, he was one step away from Weekend at Bernie's, where there was somebody like operating the cadaver. So I could understand why that was. But now you've got to, both these teams can reasonably think, hey, this is the first of many to come. We know historically that's not going to be the case, and that the team that loses this game is going to face some hurdles to get back there. But I think that there's a genuine excitement on both sides about why they're going to be here.
The only person other than Richard Sherman that I can think of having played in the last Super Bowl or in a Super Bowl before would be Joe Staley, talking about that 49ers and Ravens Super Bowl with Colin Kaepernick and Joe Flacco. It is interesting that that is something completely new about it. And that's very cool for a lot of these guys to be on that first, it is the entire world watching experience. And I wonder how some of them handle it. I think a lot of them going into this week have been remarkably confident considering this game I know is different. I think that these players can tell themselves it's just another game, but with all of the pregame festivities, with the entire week where these guys are essentially fish in fish bowls, living in those hotel rooms, you're in Miami, which has got to be one of the most distracting cities to be in, especially this time of year in the United States when you're basically there on a business trip. Imagine being there for a week. They have both been really markedly relaxed. One team in particular, Danny, I'm curious about how you view the way that Kansas City's been acting this week, whether it's the Frank Clark reality show.
The Clark thing I'm interested in, and I don't know if people have heard, he wore a sweatshirt to the media availability yesterday with Trump and Kanye West on it. And I say this honestly, I don't care about the politics of it. I don't care at all whether he was trolling, what his intention were. He's very clearly courting attention, though.
Yes.
Like, he wants people to look at him, and that's why he wore that sweatshirt. So is it kind of the Clark, like, wanting people to pay attention to him? What are you noticing about them?
I feel like Frank Clark thinks he's arrived. And you know what? Yes. Given what he has done in these two playoff games, it's a fair assessment, but you still have a big game to play against the San Francisco 49ers. We also had Sammy Watkins sort of waxing poetically about his contract, like he had maybe had, I don't know, some herbal enhancements. I might want to go elsewhere and create another Super Bowl team. Okay, Sammy, why are you talking about the future? Do you feel like you have actually won the game already?
He said that he might not play next year for the $14 million he's owed by the Kansas City Chiefs and implied that he could take the year off, which was weird. That's a very that's strange. I just chalked that up to maybe a guy not knowing what he's saying. I had no explanation for that.
And if we go to cut one, this is the one that really struck me. So Adam Schefter has been covering Super Bowls for a while. He, when he went into the Chiefs locker room, was struck by how confident that they were.
An incredible sense of confidence in the fact that they believe they're going to win this game. Now, I may encounter the same thing
right.
from the Niners when I go talk to them. I'll be curious, but I was almost taken aback at how confident they are in the fact that they believe they're going to win this game. Like it was eye opening to me.
So they're confident this week. Sure, plenty of teams are confident going into a Super Bowl. Does this feel different to you? Because to me, Danny, it does something here does feel a little bit amiss with Kansas City being here and maybe thinking that they've already gotten this in the bag.
I don't know what to make of that because I don't know if that makes if you accept that at face value and say, okay, they're confident. They're bordering on cocky. This is the most confident team we've seen arrive in the Super Bowl. Does that make it more likely to win or more likely to lose?
That's a great question. I don't know the answer to it because this is a Super Bowl without the Patriots and that mythology that if you're too cocky, the Patriots will beat you.
That idea of cocky / confidence, there is a whole range of behaviors that I think we describe in our discussions of sports media nights. Mostly talk about sort of the chattering class. People that are on the radio or on TV are writing about it. People that help us digest the sports media industrial complex, for lack of a better term. There are this whole range of behaviors that we ascribe and describe. And then whether they're good or bad depends entirely on the outcome. If the Chiefs go and blow them out, there'll be people that'll look back. This team knew how good it was. They arrived here relaxed and confident, and that was part of the reason. If they lose, the exact same behavior will be described as they were overconfident. They took this for granted.
So
they never thought this was going to happen to them. And the best example I can find of that is Rick Neuheisel, who was the Huskies coach here. When his teams would win, people would talk about how awesome it was that he played guitar, that he took his team on whitewater rafting bonding sessions, that this was part of him being a new age coach and being in touch with these players in a way. And as soon as the team started losing, those exact same behaviors became, well, that's an example of the problem with him. He didn't have discipline. He wasn't able to inspire fear. He was more interested in being their buddies than he was their coach. And there's these whole things. So when I hear that, I'm interested. I'm interested in what Adam Schefter, and he's certainly got the experience that I don't say that, look, I'll take that at face value. They're a confident group, and it struck him as that. I don't know if that makes them more likely to win or more likely to lose, however.
Then you go all the way back to, what, Super Bowl III with Joe Namath? I mean, imagine if Joe Namath and the Jets lose that game. What are people saying after Joe Namath's famous guarantee? Which was, by the way, a crazy mindset. Because the NFL was so much better than the AFL at that point, at least in the eyes of pretty much the entire world. You're making a face.
I get that. Is that as big a deal if it doesn't happen to a New York team? And if it's not Namath that does it?
I don't know.
And this has become a myth. There's a myth that's built up around it. And I get why it was important, because the AFL was considered the junior league. It sort of sets the stage for what we know as the modern NFL. And he makes this. I have a deep-seated belief that New York is the city that can't get over itself, and that anything worth happening has to happen here. And it's a bigger deal if it happens in New York. And I'm convinced. I think guarantees are one of the dumbest sports stories. Like we just talked about, I don't know what to make of whether a team's confident or overconfident. When a player guarantees a victory, I think it is the dumbest story. Like, what's he supposed to say? Like, if he doesn't feel that way, what chance does he have of winning? If he doesn't feel like, hey, I'm going to guarantee. And what does he lose if they don't win? He doesn't get thrown out of the league. It's not like some sort of haircut match in professional wrestling where, like, he's not backing it up with anything. I loved haircut
Wait,
matches.
Wait, I don't know
you?
What this is.
What? In a professional wrestling match where the loser gets his head shaved?
Whoa!
Yeah. the losing wrestler gets his head shaved. Now that would be
That's amazing.
I guarantee that we're going to win, and if we don't, you can shave me bald afterward. Like, there's something on the line then. When somebody gets out and just says, I guarantee we're going to win, and then there's all these headlines, Rasheed Wallace guarantees victory. I'm like, that's the dumbest. If you guarantee a victory, you should have to put something up.
Otherwise,
it doesn't mean anything.
And no one on the Chiefs, by the way, has guaranteed a victory necessarily. But they're supposedly very confident and very cocky. And even though I think Kansas City should win this game, Danny, this is actually putting a little bit of doubt in my mind, because I can't help but think about the Eagles leading up to Super Bowl 39, how there was talk about a parade, and how Freddie Mitchell could not shut up, whether it was talking to the media or actually like finding the Patriots at parties before the Super Bowl, like Troy Brown, former New England Patriot receiver, and like just going out of his way to talk trash to them. Now, it's not like the Chiefs are doing that. I'm just wondering about the approach of an Andy Reid-led team going into this game. Sometimes you never change your stripes.
Is Fred X the biggest clown?
Yes, of all time.
That you can think of in the past 20 years. Is he the NFL's biggest clown?
Bill Belichick basically said, I was happy when he was on the field. How often do you hear Belichick roast someone to that degree? And, I mean, he said he had something for Rodney Harrison, and Rodney Harrison had more catches than him in the game. It was one of the and since then, Freddie Mitchell has like blamed Donovan McNabb for basically his life, which is, I think, absolutely ridiculous.
It's Danny and Gallant. We're going to have the Professor John Clayton. He's going to check in with us live from Miami coming up. But right now it's time for What to Watch For.
What to Watch For every morning at 7:10. Brought to you by Dubin Law Group. The first look at the stories worth watching today with Danny and Gallant.
The University of Washington men's basketball team cannot win. You give them a double-digit lead and it's absolutely brutal. Absolutely brutal.
Man.
He ends up... They're up 11 at one point in the second half. Jaden McDaniels gets a technical foul. It sparks an Arizona Wildcats run. I want to give them credit. They did come back and build it to 7, but that team is immature. When you're down and it's a one-possession game in the final 30 seconds and the shot you get is a contested 27-foot three, that's an immature team. They don't know how to win, Paul.
Yeah, and I part of me feels for Jaden McDaniels, because I thought he had an outstanding second half. Outside of
you.
Two moments, and the two moments were so bad. The first, he has this amazing dunk. He gets in the guy's face afterwards. He gets teed up. How many technical fouls is this for him this
Five.
Year? Five. Good God. Five. I. By the way, side note, I think it's ridiculous that you get two free throws for a technical foul in college basketball, especially when it's basically the guy just yelling at another player. Come on, let's be less 1950s, but okay, he should not be doing it. If it's Jaden McDaniels doing it, come on, you got to know better. And then he has the turnover at the end of the game, and you just can't help but think, like, all this talent that they have is completely wasted. And it also hurts that on a game where Isaiah Stewart didn't play well, they actually could have won this still, and yet, as you mentioned, they blow the big lead again.
What to watch for?
Tom Brady did basically one of the most basic things that one can do on social media. And even as someone who worships the man, like, come on, dude.
Why wasn't he wearing Uggs, too?
Well, Uggs are really comfy.
Tweets. Or carrying a goat. Meh.
Well, I mean, that's a really cute picture. You know, he's holding a goat. But anyway, it's a black and white picture.
Danny.
He's in the tunnel of a stadium. He's looking out at the stadium. And as someone who is an expert on 1990s sitcoms, there are only two things that can be happening here, because if you've seen Fresh Prince of Bel-Air, or if you've seen Boy Meets World, you would know that it is a very famous move by 1990s sitcoms to have a person look at an empty room before the end of the show, before they go on to better things or before they retire. You saw it with Will Smith's character in Fresh Prince. You saw it with Mr. Feeny in Boy Meets World. I read this cryptic tweet, Danny, as either Brady is retiring or Brady is going elsewhere.
I read it as this. Look at me, everybody, look at me. It's the Super Bowl and I'm not involved, and I want everybody to look at me.
Dude, this is A-Rod extending his contract while the Red Sox were in the World Series.
Yes, that's exactly what it is.
He
announced he was going to be a free agent.
Opting out of his contract.
He was opting out. You're absolutely right. Jess is 100% right. That's exactly. Look at me, pay attention to me. Have you forgotten about me?
I'm pretty. Tom Brady.
What to watch for?
Super Bowl kickoff 3:30. Speaking of A-Rod, Are we going to see him during the halftime show? Do you think we get cameras of A-Rod?
Yes.
We should.
I think so, too. You know what, man? I like A-Rod. It is the most stunning comeback that I can think of anybody that I've ever... Because I had a deep-seated grudge against him. A deep-seated grudge, like most of Seattle. And I don't know what it is, but something turned me. I kind of like the guy now.
I like him when he's not on Sunday Night Baseball. I like him in a studio
I don't,
role.
Yeah, okay. I agree with that. I don't like him during the games.
It's the Sunday Night Baseball crew. I mean, they're acting like getting Jessica Mendoza off, it's going to fix it. I'm sorry. That whole crew is just a mess. But when you go to A-Rod in studio, I like it. I like it a lot. You know what I think has helped him, Danny? I think he has all of a sudden become self-aware. I don't know why it took till now for it to happen, but I just think that he is now willing to take a joke and that he is just different. I don't know what changed him, but good for him. I mean, sometimes you can change in life. You don't have to be an egomaniac your whole life where you have a picture of yourself as a centaur that's above your bed, allegedly.
Do you think that's true?
I hope so.
I don't want it to not be true.
If that was me, I'd start that rumor myself.
Yes.
I have a picture of myself as a centaur in my bed.
I have one. I'm just a motor.
What's a motor?
Half motorcycle? Do you watch television?
Is it
Geico?
Yeah, the Geico.
One of the commercials. Progressive? I don't know.
Yeah.
One of those.
Half man, half motorcycle. Yeah.
All right. Let's get to the professor. He's not a motar. He's live from Miami. The morning drive is next.
John Clayton's Morning Drive with Danny and Gallant.
It's a four-way battle, and there's only going to be three spots. Somebody has to go.
The first and final word on everything NFL from the professor, John Clayton.
Presented by Infinity of Tacoma at 5.
They scored 30 points a game. They're the best running team in football.
It's John Clayton's Morning Drive with Danny and Gallant.
Professor, did you take anything away from Tom Brady's cryptic Twitter post picture?
First off, I want to say I'm not a motar, but I am an Uber because, again, there's no transportation here for the media at the Super Bowl. So I'm an Uber. But here's my read on it. It's a little bit different because you know he wants to play football, right? I think what he's kind of doing is calling out the New England Patriots for two different ways. It's like, all right, since 2013, you paid me 70 cents on the dollar because I've allowed that to happen so you can go get talent and we can win Super Bowls and all that stuff. You didn't do it right this year. I mean, you didn't give me any wide receivers. You didn't give me any tight ends. You had a shaky offensive line, and I'm taking like $23 million when now people were making $34. And so it's like, I'm not going to let that happen anymore. So what I'm doing is I'm making this kind of profiled picture, looking into the future, and you don't know which way I'm looking for one of two ways. You're either going to get me players, or you're going to give me money, or both. And if that's the case, I'll go someplace else. So I think what he's doing and the way he's doing it strategically is kind of calling them out. It's kind of like when he's, going against the Atlanta Falcons and trying to pick plays and all that stuff and try to see, okay, I'm going to pick this. He's trying to pick apart right now the New England Patriots.
I went into a deep Twitter dive, John, afterwards to see if this actually had any credence, if maybe he was leaving. There were a couple of people, I think a person who covers the Titans and also somebody else, a Patriots blogger for Barstool. They basically said that he might be in Nashville looking at schools. Is that anything that you have heard? And would you be surprised if he ended up with the Titans?
Yes, 100%. I mean, I'll tell you the interesting one I heard this morning, which is really weird. Really weird. Because, again, I think that a lot of people think that the L.A. Chargers, because it's California and all that stuff. But let me throw a weird one at you because, they all moved to New York right now, the entire family. There's some person, and again, I don't have any validity to it at all because the Miami Dolphins are saying they're going to bring back Ryan Fitzpatrick. But he would maybe consider going to the Miami Dolphins and getting to buy a part of the team eventually. And the reason that could happen is that Stephen Ross is the biggest Michigan supporter in the world, right? He's the one that blew it by not getting Jim Harbaugh, who he was the quarterback at Michigan and all that stuff. But, that shows you how weird the rumors are. But there's no question that, Rob Gronkowski confirmed this. Even Jimmy Garoppolo confirmed this. He is looking. And so what he's looking to see, because really he's never had free agency, and back in 2010, at that time he signed the biggest quarterback contract and has been taking the discounts ever since. I think that he wants to see what he can get, and he wants to see how the Patriots react, because it's like, hey, if you're allowing me to go into free agency, then maybe you don't want me total, and I'll go someplace else.
Other quarterback news, we're going to have a decision. We think Cam Newton's staying in Carolina, right, John?
Debatable. It's debatable.
Okay.
Still to be determined.
How about Jameis Winston? Do you think he stays in Tampa Bay?
I think that they're going to go a different direction. In fact, I ran into Carson Palmer today and was talking to him about it, and he had not heard this one, but we've already talked about it, that Bruce Arians, you know, may consider doing Phillip Rivers because, you know, they only moved to Florida and all that stuff, kind of like they did when they made the trade for Carson Palmer. And so he started to kind of gave me a little bit of look and said, yeah, there may be something to that. I could see that because, you know, he could see that, you know, even though the talent is there for Jameis Winston, the 30 interceptions has got to drive Bruce Arians crazy. And so if there is an option, you know, they can franchise him. He wants $30 million. That's never going to happen in Tampa Bay. But I could see that, you know, Phillip Rivers, now that he's moved with his family, you know, his family of 43, actually it's 9 kids, but he's moved there, at maybe he could be a consideration to go to Tampa Bay.
It might be 43 someday, especially if he's not playing football anymore. John, do the Saints want Drew Brees back? And I ask that question because I think they like Taysom Hill a lot, and the ball seems to be in Drew Brees' court right now. I doubt that they want to force him out, but there also might be a side of Sean Payton that wants to see what Taysom Hill can do for them, because he was the better quarterback for the Saints in their playoff loss to the Minnesota Vikings.
Yeah, no, they want him back. They've already said it. I mean, Sean Payton came out like 3 days after the season. It's like, I want Payton back. Mickey Loomis this week, the general manager, says, I want Payton back. And so, no, there's no, I mean, Drew Brees back. There's no question what the Saints' intentions are. They want Drew Brees to be the quarterback. But Drew has basically said, I need a month to think about this. So the choice is Drew Brees. There's no question in anybody's mind, at least if you listen to the on-the-record words and even the off-the-record words. They want Drew Brees first. But they have to find Drew Brees in a month to see what he wants to do.
How about Dak Prescott? He doesn't have a contract. I see that he's suggesting and saying, hey, I'm not necessarily going to show up if they just franchise tag me. It appears that he's playing hardball in that route that we all painted that Russell Wilson might follow toward unrestricted free agency. It actually might be Dak Prescott that is taking a step in that direction.
Yeah, good for him. He should, because I just feel it's sinful what they've done to him, in the sense that, okay, they'll give Jalen Smith his contract. They'll give other players, DeMarcus Lawrence, a contract. He's the quarterback of the team. He wins 66% of his games, and he's the lowest paid quarterback in the league. I mean, that's unfair, particularly when you had a chance to pay him. I know that he probably, you know, I know $33 million was the number it should have been. I think they may have been around that number, and he probably wanted Russell Wilson and a little bit more and did not deserve that. But now the cost of quarterbacks is going to go up, and it's going to exceed $35 million. And so, no, I think that it's sad that they haven't, and if he's going to play hardball, he should.
Adam Schefter told KNBR that he was struck by how confident the Chiefs have been this week. In fact, he thinks it's just more noteworthy than some confidence he's seen from teams leading into a Super Bowl in a long time. Did you get that same vibe this week?
No, because I have not been to any media session other than Monday night because of the transportation problems. And, of course, you know, and the show is on during when Kansas City has their interview sessions. And so I haven't been able to get that feel, one, because this is the first Super Bowl where I've not been able to go to any of the events on Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday. So I don't have a feel one way or another. I do have a great feel that they are confident. I think you hear it from some of the overreaction of Frank Clark. I mean, you know that Patrick Mahomes is totally confident because he's comfortable in just about everything that he does. So I can understand and agree 100% with what Adam says, but I can't totally verify it because I've not been able to make any of the media sessions.
John, you mentioned Frank Clark. This week has kind of been his coming out party in terms of courting attention. It's very clear that he wants people looking at him. Do you think he's prepared for the pressure that will come with that if they lose? Because right now, if the Chiefs are to lose, there's going to be two people that reporters want to talk to. It's going to be Patrick Mahomes, and it's going to be Frank Clark. Do you think he's ready for that kind of pressure?
Probably not. I think that it'll be interesting if they do lose his availability and the things that he says. I mean, because, I mean, you can see now he's like overconfident. And so he might not handle this too well if they don't win. And that's the thing. I mean, you know, I know people discount Jimmy Garoppolo, and they shouldn't, because he did win a shootout down in New Orleans, and he has not lost very many games during his career. And this is still a talented running offense. It's a great, great defense. But, yeah, I think that he probably pushed the line a little bit. But now, as far as Mahomes, I mean, he's available win or lose. He handles things as good as anybody can. So, yeah, the pressure is going to be on Frank Clark, I think, in this one.
All right, Professor, or our own personal Uber, you sound great down there. It's been great to have
you on
this week, and we look forward to talking to you next week during the morning drive.
Okay, talk to you Monday.
He is the Professor John Clayton. He will be coming up after us from 10 to noon. You also hear him in the afternoons with Bob, Dave, and more. Coming up next, DK Metcalf. He shared his off-season plans with his quarterback, and it sounds like he's just getting started. Are his ambitions realistic? We'll tell you what they are and what the ceiling is next.
You're listening to Danny and Gallant.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
On 710 ESPN Seattle.
Now, here are your hosts, Danny O'Neill and Paul Gallant.
Well, 80s jam, yeah. Feels very Miami right now. Super Bowl's taking place in a couple of days. The Seahawks are not playing in it. Russell Wilson, though, was in Miami on Radio Row. He joined The Herd with Colin Cowherd yesterday and had some very interesting comments about young wide receiver DK Metcalf.
It was the work ethic. You know, you can't replace that part of it. You know, the time that you spend, the energy, the passion you put behind the game, all the hard work. I mean, we were getting up early in the mornings last summer during the SP's week, and during that whole entire week training at UCLA, getting up at, you know, throwing at 5:20 in the morning, 5:30 in the morning at UCLA early in the morning when nobody's up and the sun's just coming up. And I think that, you know, that drive to have somebody else do that with you, you know, and you know, work together on that. And there's places that he wants to go. You know, he wants to be the best to ever do it at his position. And he talks about it. He's not afraid about it. He's very humble. The reality is you have to visualize that. You have to visualize success, and he definitely does that.
The first part of that cut is like any other bit of audio that you hear from Russell Wilson. But at the very end, you hear him say that DK Metcalf wants to be the best to ever do it at his position, which I was struck by, Danny. I wonder if that's something that's actually realistic for DK Metcalf, who had a very good rookie season, to have as a goal. But I do respect him for having that as a goal.
It's the second time we've heard something similar to that. When I initially saw the description of the quote, my reaction was, this is typical Russ, in which he will read pretty much a phone book of his teammates when he's asked to compliment someone. Like he does a very good job about spreading credit, especially among his wide receivers. What did Pete Carroll tell us about DK Metcalf? He's a true competitor.
Chip on his shoulder.
Said he's a true competitor. And now we've heard that of that desire to be great from Russell. I think Seattle has something in DK Metcalf. And I was wrong in the prediction about him, but I think that what I didn't know is the guy's dedication to improving. I thought we've seen this story before where you've got an incredibly physical specimen of a player who has flashed potential but has never been able to be consistent in college. And usually that adds up to a guy who will be a tease in the NFL. And at DK Metcalf's size and speed, I thought it was worth the gamble. End of the second round, I thought it was great. I thought he would be better toward the end of his contract, his rookie contract. I thought maybe his first year, maybe even his first 2 years would be, he'd be a third or fourth receiver. I think the ceiling's extremely high. Here's what I want them to do this offseason. Work on quick slants with him. He should be a monster on that quick slant. Like that should be, and that should be something that they can add to the arsenal that they have that I think would be very important. Quick slants, something that is able to get dependable, repeatable yardage. What's the ceiling for him? I don't know. I think it's incredibly high. I think that he's a guy, he has the size and speed that will allow him to create touchdowns on the outside. And among wide receivers, that is the most valuable thing you can have. All of the quick shifty guys, that's great. The ability to be big and fast and make touchdowns over the top of the defense is the most valuable trait among a wide receiver, and I think it's pretty clear he has that.
The work ethic is the biggest part. And we looked at him at the NFL Combine last year and probably thought to ourselves, man, this guy's just naturally so yoked it doesn't look like he would be able to fit through most doors. But that's probably a reflection of just how hard the guy worked before the Combine to make himself look as good as he possibly could for any NFL team that would potentially take him. And it really goes to show you that Ole Miss just completely pooped themselves when it came to handling those amazing receivers they had. They had the two best receivers in college football last year based off of how they played in the NFL this season.
Deebo Samuel and DK Metcalf.
A.J. Brown. A.J. Brown and...
My bad.
Sorry, Deebo, but Deebo's up there. You're right.
Deebo's from South Carolina. A.J. Brown. A.J. Brown's ability, yes. They had two of the very best rookie wide receivers that were there, and they didn't do anything with him.
It's crazy.
I'm always skeptical.
I blame you.
Of guys whose physical traits don't match up to their college production. I'm just always skeptical of that, especially at the combine, because I'm like, look, there is there is something that happens there. Like that, there's, it's not like college coaches don't want those traits from a wide receiver. Yet we've seen here that he is performing. He had a better rookie season in the NFL than he did a senior season at Ole Miss, and that's remarkable.
It's one of those positions that I think we're starting to learn that, you know, that famous line at the beginning of The Departed, I don't want to be a product of my environment. I want my environment to be a product of me. If you're a wide receiver, sadly, you just can't do that, especially in college football. I mean, LSU once had a team with Odell Beckham Jr. and Jarvis Landry on it, and we saw what happened there. Calvin Johnson was a wide receiver in the triple option at Georgia Tech. It's one of those positions where I think you don't really 100% know what you're going to get, because sometimes the guys who are playing in these systems that pass as much as they do, also, they don't know what happens at the next level because things were so simplified for them in college. Then you get to the NFL, it's a totally different bird. I think that side of DK Metcalf, the work ethic, is something he's always going to have. And what you mentioned, the quick slants, Danny, I think that's a big thing he can work on. I think the confidence we're seeing, that he now has the confidence to go back to the ball. We saw it especially against the Philadelphia Eagles in that playoff game. He was fighting for the football. The next step, I think, is that when he's in traffic, he can come down with just about every single ball that's put there. Because that wasn't something he was 100% great at this past season. In fact, there were a couple of moments where I thought to myself, you know what? I mean, why not just throw a fade to DK Metcalf? And then you saw them go up, and you thought, and you're like, oh, okay. Well, maybe this is something he needs to work on. And the other thing, Danny, ball security. Because this could be a guy who's an absolute load running with the football with a full head of steam, tight end kind of power, strength, size, all that. But he's got to hold on to the football. No more fumbles.
He does. That's very clear. And probably part of the reason that he did suffer an injury to his neck in college, which is one of the reasons that he was available. He's looked so good. Somebody points out here he doesn't get quick releases. Yeah, you know, that is part of something he needs to work on. I've also seen times where he's gotten great releases. It's the possibility is there. The future and the ceiling on him, it's not limitless, but he has as high a ceiling as any player on that team.
Yeah, and I mean, who else has a high ceiling to the same degree as DK Metcalf? Because we know what Russell Wilson is already. Defensively, there are some young players we're getting a taste of, but we don't really have a good feel for. Is there anybody else right now, young player, that has a lot of potential that you think that you see right now?
There's no other player that has that type of, when he says, hey, I want to be the best receiver in the league. Is that likely? No, it's not likely. Is it possible? Yeah, it's possible because of the size, because of the speed he has, and because of the incredible first impression that he's made. He's got to keep working, and I think it is telling that Russell Wilson talked about him that way and that Pete Carroll told us he's a true competitor. Because to me, that's a guy that he doesn't partake in fake hustle. There's no eyewash involved with him. The things he does are things that make a difference, and he does things that matter to improve himself.
Yeah, 100%. And I'm really happy for him, and I hope that he's able to build off of what he did this first season in the NFL, which was very, very impressive. Danny and Gallant, Danny O'Neill. I am Paul Gallant, 710 ESPN Seattle. Did Russell's style improve once he met Ciara? Or did he meet Ciara because his style improved? He answers that chicken or the egg question next, and I can't wait for this.
You're listening to Danny and Gallant.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
On 710 ESPN Seattle.
Now, here are your hosts, Danny O'Neill and Paul Gallant.
It is Danny and Gallant. Russell Wilson is made an arrival. First of all, congratulations to Russell and Ciara. They are expecting their third child. They have Future. They have their daughter, Sienna, and Ciara now expecting. Russell announced that with a picture of him. Did you look at the picture? And not the sunglasses or the wife in the background, but specifically his right shoulder?
No, I did not.
If you look at his right shoulder, and Pro Football Doc, who is the former team doctor for the San Diego Chargers, Pro Football Doc on Twitter assessed it as an AC joint injury. So it's essentially a separated shoulder that he's never had fixed. It's kind of gross. Like, the gap in his right shoulder on that photo is kind of gross. Congratulations to them. Russell is also making the rounds down at Radio Row. And he was on with Joe Thomas, who is the former offensive tackle for the Cleveland Browns. And he talked about his style. And specifically, he was asked by Joe Thomas whether he had great style. And that's what got him with Sierra, or was Sierra improving his own style? It was a pretty funny back and forth exchange that they
had. You know, everyone always wants to know, like, Russ before Sierra, kind of a nerd after Sierra. He's so sweet. That's what Hawk was telling me.
No, that's bull.
So it's a chicken and the egg question. Did you get cool, then you found Sierra, or was it Sierra made Russell Wilson cool?
I started getting cooler along the way.
So it was
this is what I realized. I'll break it down for you. This is what I realized.
I realized
that when I was single, right? Every great jump shooter, every great shooter, every great basketball player, they gotta have the 3-point game.
Yeah, like
they gotta have the layup lane, right?
Shooter.
So the 3-point lane is the suit and the tie and all that. You can do that. You know, all of us we can do the layup line. We can have the shorts and the shirt, the Nike shoes.
Yep, yep.
But the mid range game is the key.
Oh,
you know. So
I had to
step up my mid range.
I need to write that down.
Man. Write that down. Mid range game
is important.
So here's the thing: when he was in chase mode with Sierra, he had to get cool to get that anyway. So he actually
said
was cool.
I was chasing. I didn't say.
When you're Russell Wilson, Sierra comes to you.
I like that either. Don't get anybody in trouble either. All right, Joe.
Little bit of confidence. That's a lot of confidence coming from Russell Wilson. He's there with Andrew Hawkins. The other thing that was very funny is Andrew Hawkins, who's a former player as well, had been rehearsing how he was going to dap up Russell Wilson, and then they arranged it so Russell just went right by him when he went for the handshake. It was actually very, very funny.
Oh, that's great. I love Andrew Hawkins. I think he's one of the funnier people that covers sports as a former player on there. And I'm enjoying this little venture that Joe Thomas and he have been doing, because I used to think that Joe Thomas was somewhat robotic, and I was kind of annoyed that everyone constantly went to him to ask all these questions. But I think they're really good. They're a really good duo together. But interesting. The mid-range game. He has to define that. What does that mean, style-wise?
Mid-range game is not casual, and it's not formal. The mid-range game is something that you would wear out to a nice dinner. The mid-range game is something where you're not even considering putting on a tie, but you don't want to look like jeans and t-shirt. And especially when Russell was wearing dad jeans with Hawaiian shirts when he was taking the team on a chartered Alaska Airlines plane to Hawaii after the 2014 season. Like, Russell's style has definitely improved. The mid-range game is that, is it stylish casual? The stylish casual. It's the sort of stuff that you see featured in GQ.
Okay. Stylish casual. Writing that down. I'm curious as to how the Ciara Russell Wilson relationship began, especially now that Russ is saying, well, who's chasing who? Who's chasing who there?
Didn't he invite her to the White House, one of those galas? I thought that was their first
date.
That's
correct.
Isn't that just like inviting someone to a Super Bowl for a first date? Interesting. I don't know.
It's Russell Wilson and Sierra.
It did. I think was it the White House Correspondents' Dinner?
It was one of those things.
Yes, that he definitely invited. It's a star pairing, and I've always said, like, in today's world of modern media coverage, there are things. Tom Brady's firmly in this category, and Russell Wilson is getting there. Where they're almost evaluated and covered by a different set of reporters and criteria that's used for it. And I don't really have any frame of reference for it at all. It seems like a very, very foreign world. I think they handle it pretty gracefully. Like, they don't have any qualms about opening up and being and showing the inside of their life. And I think that's probably really, really cool for their fans.
It definitely has to be. And for someone who's very cool with wearing a man bun, even if, you know, Danny O'Neill's like, oh,
I don't like the man bun.
But that's
just, well, that's just because I'm an old man, though. Like, let's make it clear that I am not a good evaluator of anybody's style, and nobody needs to hear that. He was also asked about his former teammate, Richard Sherman, who is going to be playing in this game, and his answer is very interesting.
You know, once again, you can't bet against Sherm. You know, he always finds a way.
Is it weird seeing Sherm in a 49ers uniform?
Yeah, I hate it. I still wish he was wearing the blue and green, but he's done it the right. You know, he's been great for the 49ers. He's brought a lot of passion and joy to that team, and all the things they've been able to do.
I 100% believe him when he says he hates seeing Richard Sherman in 49ers colors. 100% believe him.
Richard Sherman the player or Richard Sherman the person?
I don't think that Richard Sherman the person matters all that much when it comes to who Russell Wilson would like to play with. I think Russell Wilson, and this is an extreme compliment, I don't think he gets into petty little personal things about what he feels about the guys that play with him. I think that he answers the question very much like, does that player give us a better shot of winning? And if he does, I want him on our team. I don't think that there are any petty personal sort of whether it's vendettas or just opinions of like, oh, I'd rather that guy's not here. I don't think the personal impacts the professional when it comes to Russell's evaluation. I think that other guys have been rubbed the wrong way by Russell. My experience with Russell Wilson is when he's around something that either he doesn't think is productive, he just cordons it off and he doesn't interact with it. He doesn't have a problem being in a room with guys that maybe don't like him, or he's not concerned about that part of it. He feels he is a professional in that regard of, can that guy help us win? And if so, like, yeah, heck yeah, I want him on our team.
I do wonder, though, from this side of the personal thing, because I agree with you in that he definitely wants to have a better cornerback out on the field. Is this one of those situations where, with Richard Sherman gone, Russell Wilson now feels more confident in a leadership role now that things have changed? And he also can look at his command over the locker room and just the way that things are now in this locker room, where it really does feel like there is a sense of unity, commonality, and everyone gets along. It's just positive vibes, which I'm sure Russell Wilson really loves, where it wasn't really that before with Richard Sherman. And I'm sure that that side of it, Russell Wilson does not miss. I doubt that he misses the tension and all of that, because that just doesn't seem to be in his DNA. And I understand that he's one of those guys that he looks like he can compartmentalize it, but he's a human being. I can't buy that he can totally put all of that to the side.
I don't think that Russell has ever, in his time there, been reluctant to voice his opinion or to take leadership. In fact, I would say that that's probably one of the things that in some instances has engendered some resentment among teammates, if resentment isn't too strong a word, and it might be. I think that idea of he was never someone who took a back seat. And I don't think that's not a criticism, and I don't think he should have, but I don't think he's ever felt that it wasn't his team, or that, hey, too many guys are here and they're getting in the way of me leading. And when you talk about it, I mean, this is primarily, I think there was some resentment. I don't think that Richard Sherman always liked the way that Russell led or liked the way that Russell was treated. And I don't think that ever bothered Russell. I don't think that ever really impacted him, and certainly not to the point where he's like, you know what, I wish that guy wasn't in the locker room because it'd be better. Because I think he always looked at it, he's a better player for us off the field or on the field.
We talked about divorces with Andy Reid earlier this week, where this was a win for both the Eagles and obviously for Andy Reid going forward. I'm starting to feel like that with Russell Wilson and Richard Sherman. And we saw it with the jersey exchange that they had earlier this season. It does feel like they've buried the hatchet. They're like one of those couples that actually can talk with one another after a divorce. Unlike my own parents, I love you. Come on, it's been like 15 years. Get it together. But it's been longer than that. Anyway, that's besides the point. I look at these two and where they have come, and honestly, I don't know that they would be here if they were still in the same place. So I part of me thinks that for Russell Wilson, even though it's bad that Richard Sherman's not on the field for him anymore, it's good for him that he's in San Francisco.
It's Danny and Gallant. I think the Seahawks got the rotten end of that divorce. We'll get into that a little bit later. It is Danny and Gallant. We're going to bring Michael Bumpus in. He's going to join us next to Blue 42.